Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability with acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Tony may be teaching the foundations of calculus, oh my gosh, at the Classical Academy this coming year here in San Luis Obispo. Sounds pretty scary to me. he's going to be doing that along with his acting classes, which I hear are really great fun. So I'm sure that all of his students dearly love those classes, and that's what we need, you know, a lot of delight and fun in our lives. So thank you all very much for tuning in with us today. It's always such a pleasure to know that you're listening. And this evening, we're going to be talking about how important self-love is to our health and well-being. It is the basis of listening within. And without self-love, we don't love and trust ourselves enough to make room for our inner guidance in our lives. So, Tony, maybe you can show that first slide there, which is the title of our show tonight.
Certainly, Josephine.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, a very big welcome. And thanks to all of our regular listeners for your continued support. Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she has empowered thousands of people from all around the world with hard-to-diagnose and chronic health problems, giving them support and guidance in their journey back to wellness. She has also been a spiritual mentor and teacher to hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love. The title of our show tonight is Loving Ourselves, Loving Our Bodies. It all comes down to self-love. Before we begin, though, we do have a question from last week. To answer it, and possibly others, Josephine will be drawing on her far-ranging experience as an herbologist, organic gardener, and horticulturalist. However, it is important for you to know that Josephine is not a medical doctor, and she will not be giving diagnoses. So if you are injured, ill, or suffering from a disease, please consult your doctor before attempting any natural healing programs. So, Josephine, would you like to start the show this week with that question?
Yes, Tony, I would. But first, I always like to begin our show with our spiritual agreement, which was a gift to all of us from my mentor, Jana Massey. It goes like this. Please join me, if you will. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I agree.
Thank you. Me too.
Good. So last week's question comes from Maggie in California, and she writes as follows. Thanks for all you are doing in the world, Josephine. I am increasingly concerned about the effects of Fukushima and am feeling quite discouraged. Could you do a show on what a medical intuitive's views are or how to cope with this threat?
Yeah, I certainly would like to address that question, Maggie, and I really appreciate you answering that, asking that. I think that it's something that's really first and foremost on a lot of our minds here living, for those of us who are living on the Pacific Coast. A lot of those, radioactive materials have been reaching our shores, and as high up as Alaska, I understand the salmon have been found with those radioactive isotopes. So this is a really good question, very pertinent for the time right now. And the way that I like to work with these thoughts about the radioactivity from Fukushima in my own mind and my own body mind is to work with healing my mind and my emotions first. And then the body follows. I think that's often the case with no matter what it is, but especially important when we've been exposed to toxins of any sort. If we tend to focus on, oh my gosh, I've been poisoned, we really flood our immune system with a lot of, we really decrease our immune system when we flood our bodies with those brain chemicals of fear or self-loathing or anything like that. It really depresses our immunity. And so to start with, and it's going to sound a little funny, but to start with any way that you can find your way into laughter and into love and into delight. And so if we can change our mind and our emotions, our body will follow through. An example of this is when I was in that big car accident in 1993, and I really should have died from that. In fact, I almost did die 8 times. I had 8 near-death experiences in the year that followed. But when I was first struck and bounced around, actually I was hit like 3 or 4 times in that multiple car pileup, my first thought when all of the, you know, pieces and jangling had settled and we all came to a standstill was, I'm okay. And I think that that first thought was extremely important. It sort of sets the tone for our healing. So coming to that place of I'm okay, I'm actually quite positive that that thought is why I'm alive today, is because I just had a belief that I'm okay. Even though I had, you know, bones broken in the center of my skull and my brain was severely compromised, all sorts of things had happened. But that thought, I'm okay, really carried me through it. And then, of course, you know, these silver clouds of our big life lessons are really important for us to realize that behind every cloud there is that silver, there is that beauty that comes of it. It's a school here on Earth, and we're here to learn and grow. And everything is about our awakening on a soul level, and that would include Fukushima. And in this particular case, this is a life lesson on a very large scale. It includes all of humanity. Here we are in the, you know, Anthropocene era, the time of humans being the dominant force on the Earth, and this is certainly a very dominant experience that we've created here. I recently saw an image of a benevolent-looking, smiling sort of cloud-looking divinity smiling at a little baby human, and the little baby human was holding the Earth in its hands. And there was that loving, overseeing feeling there of a greater growth and learning. And I think that, yeah, we are babies and we are holding the Earth in our hands, and we are going to have to learn how to take better, much better care of our environment and our beloved planet here. But there is that divine oversight that is with us all the time. And our stinkers in our life, the stinker experience, you know, I've had quite a few of them. They've turned out to be some of my greatest blessings in the long run, in hindsight, of course. So be it the death of my mother when I was a very young woman, or any number of things that it might have happened to me that feel like real stinkers in the moment, they turn out to be great blessings. I learned how to really mother myself as a result of that experience. So, you know, this is all a part of divine plan and our greater awakening. At least that's the way that I look at it. So if you'd like, I'd like to just go ahead then with this question, Maggie and everybody else, and jump right into a little exercise that's a meditation and a prayer. And this was one that I received from my dear mentor, Jana, as well, and it has helped me so much with grappling with environmental crisis of this nature. And so it goes like this. The first thing that we want to do is to move quickly to the God Center, which is at the crown of the head. That's where we each have our own individual slice of the pie of divinity. And give gratitude for being made aware of this larger environmental situation. And then to honor the God Center, remembering that God Creator is in every activity. And then embrace what has occurred. And ask that humankind receive the gift and awaken. And then this little prayer. O Divine Spirit of the universe, this too is part of your great plan. Let us receive the gift in it. Let us awaken quickly. And that's the exercise. And then after that, you know, if we feel compelled to do something, know that we are a part of that plan. So if you feel compelled to take action and to protest or whatever that might be, then you're a part of that plan, a part of that awakening. So one of the things, sort of the shortened version that I kind of carry in my hip pocket with me wherever I go, is if I see something that feels wrong or out of balance or, you know, disharmonious, I'll first of all ask, you know, angels here now, and then I'll ask for the awakening. You know, oh God, grant us the awakening so that we can wake up from this situation and move beyond it into a more conscious state of mind. And then as well, of course, you know, raw foods are fabulous for giving us minerals. And what happens when we are exposed to these radioactive materials is if we are depleted and low in minerals, then the radioactive materials move into those sites in our bodies and live there. So, for instance, the folks who ate a lot of kelp, sea kelp, who were some distance away from the massive experience of radiation that happened with Hiroshima and Nagasaki during World War II, the people who had a lot of kelp in their diet, that natural iodine prevented the radioactive iodine from occupying those sites in their bodies, and they did much better in their healings. And so finding produce that is very mineral rich is a really good idea, and that would include a lot of heirloom produce. You know, most of our produce has been selected for shelf life and often for color or attractiveness, but not so much for deep nutrition. And so back to the garden, back to the Garden of Eden in our own backyard.
Josephine, I'm not familiar with that word, heirloom, in the context of food. Could you explain that?
Yes. Oh, sure, Tony. Thanks. Yes, heirloom, you know, is something that is an older thing from before.
Mm-hmm.
And heirloom vegetables are seeds that and vegetable plants that have been grown for centuries. They're ones that are really, you know, the older varieties. And so we can buy heirloom tomato seeds and heirloom kale seeds, and we can grow these older varieties, which are very tough plants. And one of the nice things about, and the same thing with, we recently got a book called The Front Yard Forager by Melanie Varas Herrera. And what she's talking about there is eating weeds. And the weeds are particularly good at this. These plants grow all around the world, often weeds do, same weed, whatever continent. And they are so tenacious and so strong because they have this ability to really send their roots down deep into the soil profile to access really good quality minerals from the lower levels of the soil where the bedrock is. And so same thing with a lot of these heirloom vegetables, these
mm-hmm.
old seeds and things that have been grown, say, you know, various grains or tomatoes or potatoes from Peru or, you know, the high steppes of, you know, various Russian environments or wherever it might be. These plants that are so tough that they can make it in these harsh conditions or in varying conditions from, you know, way cold to way dry to really windy to really, you know, wet or whatever it might be. These tough plants really can pack a lot of powerful nutrition in them. So that's one good way of getting your minerals in you. And then as well, we did just a little bit of research and found this wonderful comprehensive holistic approach to the plague of radiation and what to do on the Internet. And basically it's the work from Gabrielle Cousins, and he talks about the raw food diet to protect our bodies. And because we can really detoxify when we eat a lot of raw foods, and we're filling up our cells with good minerals and keeping the radioactive materials out. So, for instance, with the iodine-131, that radioactive material, natural iodine is found in kelp and in strawberries, and it protects the thyroid and the gonads. Cesium-137, we're looking at potassium found in chard and crimini mushrooms and spinach. And that protects the muscles and the kidneys and the liver and the reproductive organs. And strontium-90 is found, calcium really steps up to the plate, found in spinach and turnip and all sorts of greens of all varieties, mushroom greens and kale. That protects our bones. And then as well, of course, there's all those other excellent foods like garlic and onion and ginseng and echinacea and rosemary. And then I thought this was so interesting. They found that green tea, that 20 cups of green tea gives 97% more protection against radiation. I thought that was pretty great.
Wow.
And chlorophyll-rich foods, of course, and beets and bee pollen and all sorts of wonderful things. So there's a wealth of information on the Internet for helping us to find foods that bind to radioactive materials and turn them into harmless salts, and then our bodies can easily get rid of them, and foods that can also replace the receptor sites in our bodies for minerals, so that we don't worry about picking up those radioactive materials in the first place. Yeah, so hopefully that answers your question, Maggie.
Thank you, Josephine. Now, that was a really wonderful answer.
Yeah.
And on that thing about healthy food, I read on the internet a couple of days ago in a British newspaper that Men's Health magazine, which is a British magazine, had awarded Wetherspoons, which is a chain of pubs, their fried breakfast first prize in a healthy breakfast award. And this breakfast, I kid you not, consists of fried eggs, fried bacon, fried sausage, toast, fried mushrooms, baked beans.
Oh, my God.
Typical English fry-up. And the judges said they were particularly impressed by the fact that the sausages were low-fat and there were poppy seeds in the bread.
Wow.
So it seems so counter to everything that you've been saying about the benefits of raw food and plant-based diet, and it's no wonder that people are confused.
Yeah, well, oh my gosh, that is really something, Tony. You know, and it is confusing. You know, I have a lot of people who call me for my medical intuitive readings, and they'll, almost all of them feel, you know, I have a really healthy diet, and that is great, and it's really good to think that about your diet. That's a wonderful thing, to hold that thought. But when I hear what people are eating, I think, oh, my goodness, there's certainly room for improvement here. And so it's hard to know, you know. But I really do feel that food is our best health care, and that a plant-based diet, you know, is shown now to be better than exercise regarding preventing and reversing a lot of diseases. And again, I'll mention that wonderful YouTube, Uprooting the Leading Causes of Death, by Michael Greger, who is a research scientist. It's really quite an amazing bit of information about all the research now about exactly what does constitute a healthy diet. And then, of course, there's food combining, and I think that this is really important for us in staying healthy. And it goes contrary to, you know, our standard American diet style. You know, we think of the toast and eggs for breakfast, and then we have a sandwich for lunch, and really that combination of carbohydrate with protein is not a good combination in our stomachs. Our stomachs, the acids are different to digest both, and one has to get put on hold in the stomach with its acids getting sort of degraded as the, because sugars always step to the front of the line, so the carbohydrates will get first digestion priority, and the proteins wind up putrefying in the stomach. And so paying attention to food combining, and there's lots of sources on information on food combining, and so I really recommend that people get a chart or something about that so that they can see that basically your dark leafy greens will go well with everything, and it's probably a good idea not to combine more than two foods. So you might have your dark leafy greens like a salad with a protein, so you might sprinkle some nuts or something on there, or you might have your proteins with a low-starch vegetable, or you might have your dark leafy greens with something starchy, like potatoes or something, so potato and salad or rice and salad. And then fruits, best to eat those alone if possible. So that is one way that we can really help to improve our health. And then I also find that and this is something that has kind of come out in some of the literature, there's a really good book called Raw Family, and they talk about how when we are eating the standard American diet, we do tend to build up a mucoidal plaque in our colon, which is a clear lining of mucus, basically, that helps to protect us from a lot of the toxins that we take in with our foods. The downside is that we also block a lot of the nutritional uptake. And so when we have a lot of toxins moving through our bodies, that mucoidal plaque is thicker. And then as we clean up our diets and get a lot of the toxins out of our diets, then that mucoidal plaque gets much thinner, and we are able to access much more of the nutrition. And so, you know, it kind of goes back to that tender, loving care, you know, loving ourselves enough to eat a nice, healthy diet, which is really a healthy diet. And basically, in a nutshell, what I like to tell people is if you go back to the food tables from 200 years ago, you're probably going to find a pretty healthy diet. Now, back then, they did indeed eat meat, but often not a lot of it, because your cow or your pig was a very precious, you know, contributor to the farm environment. So mostly they were eating what came out of the garden, the fruits and the vegetables, and, you know, they had wonderful ways of preserving. And so that's what I like to recommend to people. Just go back to 200 years ago, and you'll probably find a good diet there.
Well, that seems like very good advice. Probably they weren't eating that sausage breakfast that I was talking about then.
Probably not.
Talking of that breakfast, Dr. Weed, the man who trained me to become an Alexander Technique teacher, I remember once he talked about people that have had a triple bypass operation, you know, when what presumably their arteries, is it their arteries or their veins getting all clogged up?
Yes.
And he said that after the operation, if it's a success, they tend to think that they're now healthy, when in fact they're still sick. They've just been given a temporary stopgap. And unless they manage to change the lifestyle that created the illness in the first place, the sickness, then they continue to be sick. And it's only a matter of time before something else goes wrong. Because all the operation has done effectively is what? It's given them some extra ways of getting blood, you know, through to the heart. Because the arteries that were occluded continue to be so. Mm-hmm. Is that your understanding of how it works?
Yeah. I like what Frank often says. He says, you know, that's not broccoli that's clogging those arteries. Yeah, and, you know, I love Rupert Sheldrake and his latest book, Science Set Free. You know, he talks about the 10 dogmas, and one of them is that one about how the only way that we can heal ourselves is by using our standard Western medical approach. But there are so many other ways to heal and to prevent disease in our lives. And you know, I think that starting with that, cleaning up that standard American diet style is probably really primary. And then, you know, as a medical intuitive on my intake form, when I'm interviewing somebody to prepare for giving them a reading, I always like to ask, you know, the basic questions of, you know, what are the caffeine levels? What's the chocolate, coffee, you know, caffeine levels in the body? Because that can really contribute to stress. I mean, people think that coffee gives them a boost, but actually some of the studies that I remember Chloe, your darling wife, telling me about, where in England they found that actually you're less effective with caffeine, with more coffee in your body, that you get more jittery and are less responsive, your response time is slower. And then, of course, I always ask about alcohol consumption and cigarettes. I mean, a very little bit of alcohol, if it's wine, it's not such a problem, but if you get into a lot of it, then that can be really a problem. And, of course, cigarettes, the great Dr. Schultz used to tell people if they were smoking, just go home and quit smoking and then you can come back, but I'm not even going to get started with you until you quit that, because it so undermines our health. And then I always ask about the three whites, white sugar, white flour, white rice, you know, because those are empty calories and we're not getting nutrition in. And so this is sort of a little bit of a recap here on, you know, how we want to take care of ourselves, how we want to give ourselves good quality nutrition and love ourselves enough to do that. And it's really hard to do. I mean, I grapple with it. Everybody I know, we all try the best we can, and we want to be forgiving and loving of ourselves. And, yes, we all make mistakes, and we try to do better again the next day, you know. So it's not about feeling bad about ourselves, but just trying to clean up as much as we can. And then, of course, our emotions really contribute to our health. You know, if we have really negative thoughts, that floods our body with chemicals and hormones that decrease our immunity, like I was saying a few minutes ago. And then circumstance can add to our problems, like me with my injuries in the past. But again, you know, going in and asking ourselves, taking the time to ask ourselves what it is that we need and how we can change and what would be the best way to do that, that can often reveal to us those underlying emotions or habit patterns that we need to work with, and that can be a great education on self-care right there.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine.
Sure.
So before we move on to our topic tonight on the importance of self-love with regard to health and healing, there was something that I'd like to bring up from last week. And I recall that you mentioned drinking baking soda water in order to change your body's pH. It's a logarithmic scale, which is just a note for any young mathematicians of my students who might be listening in. They should know about that now. Anyway, back to the baking soda. You gave a story about a woman you know whose esophageal, I think that's the right word, tumor from her esophagus, it disappeared in just 1 week drinking baking soda water, if I've recalled that correctly. Now, I find that extremely fascinating. Perhaps you could just elaborate a bit on it and explain how that works.
Yes, that was a cancerous tumor, and mm-hmm. what happened was, the recipe that she shared with me that she was using was a half a teaspoon of baking soda in a half a gallon of water, and that really does change our pH. And she had had a cancer case, bowel cancer, some years prior, and at the time that she had her surgery and the cancer was removed, she found out from her medical doctors that her pH was really low. And so she just happened to be at a party visiting with a naturopath a few weeks later, and he said, you know, try drinking some baking soda water, it'll adjust your pH. And she got those little urine test strips, and she started to use those, and within just a few days, drinking a half a gallon or more of baking soda water per day, got her pH up into a nice normal range. And like you mentioned, it is a logarithmic scale. So the difference between 1 point in pH, you know, like the difference between 6 on the scale of pH and 5 is sort of like a spill of a glass of water on the carpet. But the difference between 5 and 4 is like a spill the size of a football field.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between 4 and 3 is like the state of California. It's a really large change. It really,
you know, that's a really good way of explaining logarithmic scales. I wish I'd had you in my class when I introduced it.
Here I am, a mathematician, and I didn't even know it.
Yeah, that's just perfect.
Yeah, so, and in that case, you know, the tumor was, the cancerous tumor was on her esophagus, and in 7 days after changing her pH and drinking this water, when she went down for her surgery, they went in and could find no tumor, and they took 20 biopsies around the inside of her esophagus and found no cancer whatsoever.
Wow.
So this was a situation where she not only changed her pH entirely throughout her whole body, but she was also bathing that tumor many, many times a day in the baking soda water. And I've heard of other situations where people have used baking soda injections into the tumor site, like in the case of a breast cancer tumor or something. Now, that brings me to another little point, which is calorie reduction. You know, they've found that that is one of the highest ways, one of the best ways of keeping us healthy for a long, healthy life, is people who have at least a couple of days a week where they eat very reduced calorie load, like 200 calories a day or something, real minimal, instead of constantly. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense if you think of our evolutionary past, where we would have times where we wouldn't be able to access food for a few days, perhaps. And then as well, water fasting is long known for, and juice fasting for that matter too. I've done some extensive juice fasting. And what happens when we have those, when our body is really losing weight and dropping down, you know, the body has a tremendous wisdom, and it will absolutely eat up tumors and things first. I mean, it's going to just gobble those up and turn them into food and poop them out. So that's another thing that people have used a lot. Maybe you could show that slide, in fact, Tony, that second slide that we have. And this one says, and I love this quote, it's so perfect. It says, a sick animal retires to a secluded place and fasts until its body is restored to normal. During the fast, it partakes only of water and the medicinal herbs which inherited intelligence teaches it instinctively to seek. That's by Juliette de Baraclee-Levy. And, you know, my mom used to say, starve a cold, feed a fever.
I've heard that.
Yeah, and I think really starve a cold, starve a fever. You know, I mean, when I'm sick, I find that my best healing comes from not weighting my body down with digestive tasks, but just allowing its immune system to just get busy with cleaning up the mess, whatever needs to be cleaned up. And so I'll usually go on juice feasting. I'll usually have my, you know, celery and cucumber and various other green vegetables all juiced up and drink at least a couple pints of that a day. And anyway, I think, you know, this little quote here about the sick animals, you know, I can remember, you know, I had a dog who went under the house for a couple of days and came out fine. I had a cat who went to a neighbor's garden shed and just hung out there. And you know, there's that famous story of the Hoxie cure for cancer where, his grandfather followed a sick horse around and watched what herbs it ate, and it thrived on those herbs. And, you know, we are a part of nature. We're not separate from it. And we still have access through our inner knowing and through our psychic ability, through our clairvoyance, which is our clear sight, or our clairaudience, which is our clear healing, hearing, or our clairsentience, which is our clear sense and our feeling sense. We have access to all of the knowledge of our evolutionary history that our bodies developed on. You know, that evolutionary history is what developed our bodies and who we are. And all we have to do is, like the animals, to go within and to listen. In fact, on my website, www.stepintomagic.com, there's the top menu listing of articles. And if you go to those articles and scroll down, there's one called Trip and Fall. And it's about just that. I took a nasty fall, and I just gave my body the time. I didn't pop right up. You know, I just listened to what needed to happen, and it was a really bad fall. I mean, my teeth almost went through my lower lip, and I really sincerely injured myself, knocked the wind out of myself. But I laid there for about a good hour, and as I did so, I felt very subtle little changes happening in my musculature of my skeleton. And things just slowly unraveled and rearranged themselves, and I took a long time to roll over, and the next day I was fine. It was amazing. I was able to go to my exercise class and my dance class. So with that, maybe you could show our next slide, Tony. This one says, listen, make a way for yourself inside yourself. And that's a really important principle of self-love, you know, to love ourselves enough to give ourselves what we need. And this leads us further right into tonight's topic, which is all about loving ourselves well enough to meet our needs and our goals and our dreams and our desires and, you know, what we've come here to do. So with that, that's really kind of the bottom line, loving ourselves enough to take care of ourselves. And that self-love as a basis of health. And so sometimes when I've been going through healing challenges, I'll make myself up a little healing self-care checklist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have a spiritual category. And, you know, I give myself a little gold star if I get, you know, more than 75% of these right or get them done during the day. And I keep it handy somewhere. And usually each of these things just takes just a second, you know, or two. So some sort of meditation or listening, that can be as quick as 30 seconds, really, preferably 5 or 20 or an hour, but whatever. And then I'll do morning prayers, or I'll do writing, or 30 conscious breaths, or, you know, loving thoughts or actions towards others, or imagining healthy images about myself, or singing or whistling or humming. So those would all be under, you know, the spiritual category. And it's easy to get those things. You know, you can whistle for just 1 second and then check that off. And that's a good thing. We've accomplished that. And then activities might be, you know, getting some of the morning sun on my skin, or touching the earth, which is like touching truth, or stretching for a half an hour, having a regular bowel movement, you know, that kind of thing, walking a little bit, tending to my hygiene, you know, doing some sort of elevated heart rate exercise. And then as well, I might have a category for healing support, like am I going to get a massage or visit the chiropractor today, or can I do some sort of art or some sort of helping somebody else, and or maybe having a nice phone conversation with somebody I love, or helping them in some way, or having a hug or some sort of nice physical contact. And then, of course, rest is so important for us when we're healing ourselves and taking care of ourselves. So quiet time, you know, just even if it's just 5 minutes, to just sit down and put your feet up. I have a dear friend who was saying that she's been so busy lately, and one of the things that she's been doing is caring for an elder friend. And I said, well, what a great opportunity for you to go and put your feet up and have a nice, you know, healing moment over there. And she loved it. Or playing a little music, or listening to music, or, you know, certainly getting our 8 hours of sleep, or 7 at least, whatever it is that our bodies require. And then, you know, this is one of the beauties that Frank has taught me. It's about how to take a nap, and what a great thing that is to do every day. And then, of course, food, you know, good organic quality food, a half a gallon of water, you know, maybe some sort of herb tea, and making sure I'm getting my vitamins and my minerals through my food, and no caffeine, and lots of fruits and veggies, or some sort of, you know, whole grains or potato or beans or something like that, you know. No deep fried foods, no processed foods, unlike your Witherspoon's healthy breakfast there.
But it's funny because you say that, because some people, they describe that as comfort food, as if they feel that they're taking care of themselves, you know, when they eat pizza or sausages or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, you know, we have to shift our view of comfort foods because we have been taught that. You know, that, you know, I can remember when I was a good little girl, you know, my mom would sit us down to a bowl of ice cream. And, you know, it felt like that was mommy time. You know, we get this nice ice cream and mommy loves us. And so we kind of have that emotional equation, and, you know, we equate that bowl of ice cream or that, you know, ice cream cone now or whatever it is with, yes, love, I love myself. And that's an emotional association. And we can find a different emotional association instead. Now, I know it's going to sound really, really wild, but I have actually switched to having one of my primary comfort foods is my green juice. I know that a lot of people would think, what? What kind of a nut are you? But but it really is. Now, that's not to say that I don't love a good bowl of ice cream, but I try not to, though, because it's, you know, it's, we know that there's sugar there, and that's an addictive problem for me, and, you know, I try not to go there. But, yeah, so we do need to love ourselves enough to take care of ourselves. And, you know, I love that wonderful Louise Hay, who has brought so much good to the world with her beautiful book, You Can Heal Your Life. And she speaks of doing mirror work, and that means going to the mirror. And, you know, you can do this first thing in the morning. And look at yourself in the mirror, look deeply into your eyes, and then say, I love you, Josephine. I totally love you, just exactly the way you are. And, you know, that can be a tough and challenging exercise for people. And I know a lot of people who can't do it. They just can't. For whatever reason, they feel so much self-loathing. And that's really hard on our bodies to have that, those kinds of feelings inside of ourselves. And really, what have we done that's so terrible? I mean, Frank likes to say, you know, what, did you run over the neighbor's cat? Well, no, you know, maybe you did some silly little stupid thing, but it's not as bad as, you know, killing somebody or something like that. So really, half of the things that we hold ourselves in such harsh judgment over are really minimal, nothing, you know, just nothing. And yet we are so hard on ourselves and we withhold our love for ourselves. And so sometimes we can start by thinking of ourselves as a little tiny child. You could probably love the little tiny child self. Or I have one friend who says, you know, I am willing to love myself. And that's a nice start, too. But you want to move beyond that. You want to move into, I love you, Josephine. I love you just exactly the way you are. And smile at yourself and love yourself. And then as well, affirmations, you know, said with positive thoughts are a really great way for us to keep ourselves on board. I have a number of affirmations that I, you know, have used for years and years. And one of my favorites is, I am loved, loving, and lovable. And then another one is, movement is my delight. I am comfortable in my body, and I love being me. It's always easeful and a pure joy for me to move. And I'm attentive to my needs for pacing myself, and I give myself plenty of quiet time so I can further my spiritual research, growth, and development. I love and thoroughly enjoy my vibrant health with gratitude. Frank and I live in a beautiful, healthy world wherein nature abounds and love prevails, and all of our days together are wonderful, and many, many more delightful days still lie before us. We love all of our neighbors, and we live in a peaceful and quiet community full of respect and joy and honoring. And I love my life, and my life loves me. And, you know, they really can change our lives. I mean, there were some years back, you know, we live right here by the university, and our little street has, you know, I don't know, a dozen houses on it, and all but two or three of them are filled with four or five or six college students. And, you know, they're young people, so they're robust, and they have a lot of energy, and they want to get out and yell and scream and jump around in the middle of the night. And, you know, there was a time where that seemed a little threatening and kind of bothered us a little bit. And then we just consciously decided to change our mind about that. And so we started getting to know them all through, you know, parties, a little watermelon sundae when they first come into town, and just enjoying each other's company and getting to know them. And pretty soon then we wound up realizing that if there was a loud, boisterous activity, oh, that's just Christos down the street. He's having a good time. I wonder if he's with his new girlfriend, you know. And we just changed our minds about it. And then part of that, how we did that, was with that affirmation. We love all of our neighbors, and we live in a quiet and peaceful community full of respect, joy, and honoring. So these things can really work magic in our lives. So I strongly recommend the use of affirmations. In fact, maybe you could show that next slide there, which is, I am loved, loving, and lovable. I love my life, and my life loves me.
On that subject of affirmations, Josephine, when I hear you saying them, you say them with such conviction, and they just seem to flow out of you so naturally and easily. Was it always like that for you? Because I'm just thinking, I don't know if it's because of the English in me, but I'm struggling to imagine myself saying it, you know, I am loved, loving, and lovable, with that same gusto and freedom.
Yeah. Well, and that is so important that we do use the gusto. You know, we are magical beings, and if we're, you know, like, I'm loved, loving, and lovable.
I'm loved, loving, and lovable sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. You know, that's not going to get us there. We need to really believe it and feel it. Our feelings are the, you know, the realm of our subconscious mind, and if we really want to change our programming and our negative beliefs, we have to really get in there and, you know, weed out those negative self-programs that were installed either by ourselves or by others. We need to identify them, and we need to find them and kick them out of there. And that will allow us to be able to move into those affirmations. You know, what I do is, so for instance, let's say I have a negative thought that comes up like, well, I'm not really very loving, you know, or whatever. I'll say to myself, you know, thank you for sharing. You know, that's a thought that used to serve me well, but it no longer serves me now. And I have a replacement thought at the ready, like, I am loved, loving, and lovable. And I just make that shift. I just move ahead into it. So we need to, you know, be very forgiving to ourselves about the programs, you know, negative self-programs that either we've installed ourselves or that were installed in our childhood by other people. And, you know, just bless them and realize that our problems bring us our growth, and that that's all good, and that this is an opportunity for our growth. So forgiveness and just allowing that. And then realizing that, you know, life is full of infinite possibilities, and what do we want to focus on? You know, it's like that TV changer, you know, TV channel changer. There's, you know, 65 million TV programs that can be watched out there, and yet we're stuck on the one really bad news program, and that's the only one we watch all the time. You know, well, it's a really good idea to switch to a comedy station. Have some fun in life. And again, you know, self-love, no guilt, you know, forgive the previous programs, just identify what our limiting beliefs are. And this is all about knowing thyself. This is a really ancient creed that goes back to the goddess times. Know thyself. It was written in stone over the ancient city of Delphi way, way back. And then, you know, we want to love ourselves just exactly the way we are. You know, that I love you. I really love you just exactly the way you are. And then we find our true purpose through our life's big lessons as well. So, you know, the injuries and illnesses, things like these can force change, and they can really bring us our greatest gifts in the long run. So these are decisions that we make from within ourselves. That's how we change ourselves.
That's so true, Josephine. It's reminding me, I listened to an interview with Michael Fox, the actor. I believe he's suffering from Parkinson's disease,
yes,
which completely changed his life. And he was actually saying that he was grateful for it, that the lesson it brought him, how it changed his life, you know, in terms of how he got to know himself and how it changed the way he was with everyone
else. Oh, that's fabulous.
It was like he thought it would saved him more than anything else.
Oh, wow.
And the same was true for Larry Hagman, you know, the guy that played JR in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
I remember listening to him talk about a near-death experience that he had. And he was seriously ill on a hospital bed, about to die. And then he suddenly had a moment of realization that he'd got everything in his life, you know, wrong, and he'd been a bit too much like the character of JR in Dallas.
Wow.
And that really it was all just about love. And so from that moment on, he survived and came back, and that completely changed him. And he was really grateful, you know, for that illness, which nearly cost him his life, because that was a turning point for him.
Isn't that something? Those are great. Thank you for mentioning those. Those are really great to hear. Yeah, Michael Fox and Larry Hagman, good examples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and our bodies, you know, we are very strong and very durable. I sometimes think about us, you know, in our evolutionary past, crossing over from China across the frozen Bering Strait and coming down Alaska and coast of northern Canada, you know, how we survive those incredible conditions and then, you know, off across the desert on camels with only a handful of dates to eat for, you know, 10 days or whatever. Oh, my gosh, it's amazing what we can get through. So we're very, very strong and durable, but yet we're so frail and so precious. I mean, one bee sting or a hammer on the finger and it's like, oh, my God.
That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah, and maybe you can show this next slide. I love this. This was another wonderful mentor of mine, a local Feldenkrais practitioner, John Hannon. Wonderful man, great doctor. He really saved my life, I think, during that big head injury that I had. He had some real sane, rational advice to give me that I didn't receive anywhere else, no matter how many people I went to. He really had the matter of the situation. And he advised me to let ease be your guide. You know, we often hear that saying, let pain be your guide. Well, why not just take it one step closer to let ease be your guide?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we can ask for our body lessons to be easeful and gentle, you know, because we do have these big lessons that happen, and it doesn't always have to be through illness or through injury. You know, we can say, gosh, I'd like to go ahead and learn, but can it be really easeful? So, you know, my wonderful mentor that I mention so often, Jana Massey, she had, an amazing ability to really move through the world with a lot of ease and grace. And I used to just watch her in amazement because she would never injure herself. It was really something to see, you know, because it seems like sometimes we cause all sorts of little injuries to ourselves all day long, you know, be it dietary choices or whatever. And another really wise friend of mine, Alita, once said to me, you know, I said, what is the secret? What is it? How do you just wind up looking so beautiful and so youthful and despite your many decades here on Earth? And she said, you know, somewhere along the line, I just realized that I just needed to finally stop hurting myself. And I thought, oh, my God, how brilliant is that? So, yeah, we can let ease be our guide. And then we can surrender to what Spirit puts before us with the intention for the highest good. And, you know, that's what we're here to do. We're here to embody the divine, to, you know, let our... And then I think we can also ask for the assistance of Spirit. You know, our angels and our guides, our helpers, they're all around us all the time. Spirit is present and available. Some of you may recall from the program we did back in, I think it was July, on prayer, we did a week called... The help me prayer, and our friend Helena came in and spoke about a near unbelievable calamity in traffic where she just closed her eyes and yelled, help me, and the next instant she opened her eyes and the whole mess was behind her. And you know, so don't forget to go to the radio archives sometimes, and there's a prayer, that one prayer show.
And we do have a question from Cindy, and she writes, is there a way to know if an illness or disease is emotionally related or genetically inherited?
Well, thank you, Cindy. What a great question. Yeah, you know, that Bruce Lipton, I just love him with his biology of belief. And really, we do uncover our genes with our thoughts. So we have a vast array of genes available to us. And then what we are thinking about turns on or turns off our genes. And so it really gets down to our beliefs as to how our genetic expression occurs. And that seems to be much more so our reality than our experiences. So, yes, diet and lifestyle can further affect our outcome. Like Tony spoke earlier about the heart disease with that amazing breakfast of fried sausages and things. And similarly, you know, liver disease and things, I mean, alcohol and toxins and pesticides. And heart disease, you know, wasn't there a foolproof memory loss cure? I can't remember. No, actually, I think it was niacin, 250 milligrams of niacin. That good flush really helps to clean the brain out. But also, I really do feel that almost all of our diseases have an emotional root. it seems like the body sort of uses whatever toxins or things that are available to create our soul lessons. And so thus the importance of self-love and really working on those positive emotions and forgiving ourselves and others. And there's a, maybe you can show that next slide there for us, Tony.
This certainly. Is
another beautiful quote by Rumi, and it says, "Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it." And that holds true for self-love as well. And so, yeah, loving ourselves and forgiving the self and forgiving others and, you know, doing like that meditation exercise that we did and you know, using our affirmations. And we can really, you know, and we're going to get a lot more into that next month, too, because we're going to get into healthy relationships. And so learning how to move into forgiveness through that, you know, that kind of thing. So just holding our emotions in a positive place is really important for us to do. And then, you know, when we do love ourselves, we really tend to draw our healthy choices to us and have less of a problem with that inner rebel that wants to fight out and hold on to the old, you know, that no longer serves us. When we love ourselves, we're at peace within, and our brain chemicals and our hormones are beautiful, and they're flooding ourselves with healing instead of those negative thoughts, which really decrease our immunity and decrease our white blood cells, you know, those thoughts of fear or self-loathing. So, and then we're really here to embody spirit, and that brings us to our next slide. And this is how we stay in our joy. We want to do what we love. And this slide says, "You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees through the desert for 100 miles repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves." The beautiful Mary Oliver, one of my favorite poets. You know, she just really hit the nail on the head with that one. And we want to stay in our joy. We want to do what we love.
Oh, that's such a beautiful quote. Well, they both are, the Rumi and the Mary Oliver. They're both so, I don't know, to the point and inspiring.
Love that. Love them both, yeah.
Anyway, Josephine, we may have time to squeeze in another question. This one is from Adeline in California, and she writes, "I sometimes get a very strong sense that a particular food would be helpful or harmful to someone close to me. However, I often ignore or don't like or mistrust or second-guess my thoughts." And I'm just following this thought here that she's written. So I often ignore my intuition when it comes to my own health. So how can I trust it for someone else? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
How can I trust it for someone else?
Yeah, okay, Adeline. This is, you know, a surprisingly common question that I get from people who are just starting down the path of being a medical intuitive, of getting sort of an intuitive ability in regards to health and healing. And it's an experience that I certainly had myself as well, of beginning to get impressions for other people and wanting to share them with them, but then not necessarily paying attention to my own intuition regarding my own self. And so I'm right there with you, and I think most people do kind of go through this as they're beginning to develop their clairvoyant healing abilities. And it's also one of the main protocols that I have in my work. You know, so often people will call me and they'll say, you know, I just really, you know, I don't need anything myself, but I really want you to do a reading for my friend, and how about if I pay for it and I'll, you know, have, and then I'll give it to them. You know, I have to say, well, that's so sweet of you, and thank you so much, and I'm so glad that you love your friends so much, but they have to want it, and they have to ask for it. And so often we want to be able to help our friends and our loved ones and our family members, and we want to suggest things for them, but that's a little bit invasive, really, in a way. I mean, I know I'm doing it all the time. I'm telling people what I think they should do, but unless they've asked for it, it's probably best for us to, you know, just use demonstration as our way of teaching. And that really is the best way for us to teach. People learn through demonstration. So as well-meaning as we are, you know, change happens within, and they have to ask for it, and in the meanwhile we can demonstrate. So paying attention to your own intuition for your own self, and then not ignoring it but trusting it, and not trying to rationalize it away or second guess it, but just stay with it and do what you receive. That is what you want to work on. And, you know, when I was a young girl, my mom was always out there gardening and wanting me to come out and help her and learn how to, you know, save seeds and plant vegetables. And at the time I thought, oh, come on, you know, that's just I would so rather do just about anything, ride my bike and go play with my friends. And then, you know, just stunningly and miraculously, you know, after she had passed away and I, without even thinking about it, I found myself interested in plants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, maybe I would like to do some gardening. Now, what did I learn from my mom? And, oh, my gosh, here's some old leek seeds that she saved, you know, and sure enough, I'd plant them and they'd grow. And, you know, it's just astonishing how we learn from our, those that have demonstrated before us. And, you know, my mom was a real natural gal, and she, you know, lived, ate a lot of healthy vegetables, lived a nice life, you know, in many ways. And I learned a lot from her. I learned a lot about health and healing from my mom. So, you know, when you receive your information, act on it. It'll grow. You don't want to ignore it. You want to just get it and act on it. And that gains results, and that builds our confidence, and that increases. It seems like what we focus on, we get more of. You know, that wonderful saying, intention plus attention creates manifestation. So it's really good for us to keep ourselves healthy and clear, especially if we want to start to perceive for other people, especially if you're in training to be a medical intuitive or want to go ahead and teach yourself how to do that. It's especially important to listen to your own intuition and follow through on it. And then if other people want information, they can ask.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. I wish we had more time and that I could ask you some of the other questions, but sadly, we're getting too near the end of the show. I'm sure that everyone listening has really enjoyed this topic of the body as the temple of the soul. The link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website. Simply go to stepintomagic.com and click on radio. And most of our listeners receive a weekly email reminder with the link for the show. If you'd like to join that list, please send us a message now using the box to the left-hand side of the screen. Or if you're listening to the replay, just go to the contact page of Josephine's website and send us a message. We treat all emails that we receive confidentially. And if you have enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. So before we close, Josephine, do you have any parting words?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Tony, very much for that. You know, when we love ourselves enough to take good care of ourselves and listen within, it not only keeps us healthy and clear, but it also really increases our psychic ability. And in the appreciation of the gift of your time that you've given me tonight listening to our program, I always like to share this closing blessing, which is, again, a gift from my dear friend Jana Massey, and it goes like this. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a true pleasure talking with you this evening. And I trust that everyone listening has learned something really useful about developing psychic ability and the role of self-love in healing. This has been show number H5-1.14. And we look forward to having all of you join us next week when, for the month of February, we will be exploring the role that healthy relationships play in the fuller expression of our psychic ability, spirituality, and purpose in life.
Thank you all so much for listening. I'm really honored by the gift of your precious time. And self-love is such a vital key to the healing of our bodies and our emotions and our mind. When we love ourselves, we love our lives, and love flows to us in every form and in every way. When we love ourselves, we also find that our problems become beautiful opportunities in our lives, and we find ourselves on our soul path, just like a beautiful herbal garden path, happy, healthy, and whole. I'd like to finish with this last slide, if you could, Tony. It's a quote from Luther Burbank, and it says, "Flowers always make people better, happier, and more helpful. They are sunshine, food, and medicine to the soul." So Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing, and I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.